Hello, good evening. Thank you for having us here. It's a great pleasure to be here. We are Mediengruppe Bitnik, an artist group from Zurich. My name is Carmen, this is Dorma. And we would like to talk about our artistic work. Our work deals a lot with public spaces and the possibilities of publics. And our practice is very explorative and interventionist. You could say one of our main artistic practices is hacking. We take hacking from computer culture and transfer it onto our art practice. But instead of trying to explain what we do in theory, we'll show you two of our works. The first is called Opera Calling. It's an older work. It's from 2007. And we produced it in collaboration with Gabriel Voltaire, which is a Dadaistic art space in Zurich. It's an art space which is in the house where Dada was founded 100 years ago in Zurich. And we started out this work from a curiosity about opera. Opera in general as an art form, but also the Zurich Opera House, coming from digital culture and the collaborative practices of the internet, opera is a very strange art form. It's very closed. You need to be dressed in a certain way to go there. You need to go there in person. There's no way of participating otherwise. The fees are quite high, so you need some money also to get in. And this led to this project.
So also to give you a little bit more of a local context, so 85% of all the cultural budget of the canton of Zurich goes directly to this house. So the rest, so the remaining 15% are shared by all other art forms, dance, theater, museums, fine art spaces, whatever. I mean, like 15% versus 85. So, and additionally, at the beginning of the 80s in Zurich, the youth riot started in front of the Opera House. So there was a youth demanding space for self-organized youth culture and a little bit of money. So if you talk about opera in Zurich, everybody knows about those two backgrounds. So they always resonate somehow. So we asked ourselves, how can we open up this closed system of the Zurich Opera House? How can we become part of the opera audience without actually going there?
In our research, we stumbled across this very beautiful image. It shows the forgotten use of the telephone from the outgoing 19th century. So right after the telephone was invented, companies started to try to sell the media, but they couldn't say, well, you know, buy yourself a phone, then wait for a while, and maybe somebody else will buy one in your neighborhood, and then you can call each other. So what they did was they connected whatever local cultural institutions they had up to the telephone network. So you had something called Teatro Phone or the Opera Phone in Paris. And this was in place until the radio was invented. So basically the telephone was used as a radio up until the invention of the radio. You see here on the right, the opera singer. In front of her are microphones on the stage. In the center, you see the telephone switchboards, and then the family at home receiving this opera transmission in front of their telephone. The telephone doesn't have a receiver like we know it today. It's more gramophone loudspeaker, so it was really used as a sort of a wall telephone.
This was like one of the first uses of like live transmission of something, so it was so super strange for the people to experience something which is not happening in the same room.
We really like this, and we sort of asked ourselves what would happen if we would recreate this service as a public service nobody had asked for 100 years later.
So instead of using these microphones, we decided to install box, like audio box, hidden microphones inside the Opera House. And we had like an exhibition space in the Cabaret Voltaire, which would get the live audio feed out of the opera. And there we had a telephone server running, connecting like local households in Zurich, just like calling them. So basically there was like a random generator scanning through the telephone book of Zurich and just like randomly picking one number and saying, hey, here's the live opera, you wanna hear it, just stay connected, beep, and here it is.
This is the auditorium of the Opera House, and we quickly found out it's not a good place to place the bugs. You need to place them behind the stage, so they stay there a lot longer.
So this is a screenshot from a newspaper on Swiss television. In the picture, you see the director of the Zurich Opera House showing one of those bugs they found live on telly. So they were expecting the bugs to be like James Bond-like devices, and they were really surprised that we just used like normal mobile phones. We could call in, and they would pick up automatically and give us like something like an audio feed. So they were not really happy about those thing about this project going on. So we received a really harsh letter saying we should immediately remove all the bugs. They gave us 2 days, or they would call the military service to debug, or I don't know what the word is, but to debug the opera house, and we would have to pay the fee. So the letter also said they would sue us for copyright infringement, while at the same time the Opera Singers Union wanted to sue us for transmission fees. I mean, like normally you have to pay something if you broadcast, and for libel, because of the bad audio quality. So people could think, hey, within like this telephone transmission, we sound so badly, nobody, people will think we can't sing. So this was like, these were the facts.
This is the bug, what it looked like, when it was not being unwrapped by the director of the opera.
So it was really cheaply made, like gaffer tape, and external microphone for a little bit better audio quality, and it was taped, so just like if we called the mobile phone, the LED, the display wouldn't light up. So it's really like we could produce it really fast.
Mm-hmm. This was the telephone machine at the exhibition space in the Gabriel Voltaire. This was the only place where you could listen to the work without having to receive the call at home. So you could come here and listen in on the opera while the service was running.
So, yeah, we produced like a small film. It's basically one call showing a family receiving this strange opera telephone. It's Sunday afternoon in March 25th, and we'll just listen in for a few minutes so you get a little bit of context what it was about. I'm playing, yes. So it's a black screen with subtitles. Can we have more sound, maybe? No audio guys around?
Ja, hallo, grüezi. Hier ist das autonome Operntelefon der Stadt Zürich. Zu Ihrer Freude und Unterhaltung haben wir in der Zürcher Oper eine Wanze platziert. In wenigen Sekunden werden Sie live ins Opernhaus verbunden. Sie können bequem von Ihrem Wohnzimmer aus der heutigen Vorstellung von der Rosenkavalier von Richard Strauss beiwohnen. Viel Spaß!
Hallo, was soll das? Das ist großartig. Du, ich häng da auf, hä? Ich häng da auf, was soll das Ganze? Ich will ja keine Oper. Wie? Nee, noch nicht. Ja, hier, da singt einer, wunderschön. Thank you. Ja. Also hier, dann komm mal. Also die Akustik ist eine absolute Katastrophe. Aber bitte, was bringt hier? Da hast du das.
Michael, ich muss euch die Aktion erklären. Die rufen Leute an, wählen die aus, so der Zufallsgenerator, das Opernhaus, das wird so stark subventioniert und nur die reichen Leute haben was davon. Und jetzt haben sie Wanzen angebracht und jetzt kann man die Oper jetzt live, das spielt sich jetzt ab, kann man die Oper miterleben.
Hier gibt es eine Telefonnummer.
Dann
sagen Sie, wollen Sie schnell hören?
Und dann haben Sie gesagt, die sind jetzt weg, Herr Professor,
und Sie sind direkt ins Kuppernhaus. So. It goes for another 4 minutes. It's a beautiful piece. And I mean, like, they try to find out which opera is playing, so a kid will join in and they will explain what the opera is and blah, blah, blah. So they're really excited. So it goes for about 8 minutes. It's on our website if you want to check it.
As you saw before, and the woman already explained, so the media picked up heavily on the project locally. There was a big discussion about who owns publicly funded culture, who has access, and it went back and forth for a while. Also, the legal battle between the Opera House and us and the Gabriel Voltaire, and because the media also sort of made it into this David against Goliath story with the small poor artist against this big subsidized opera house. They sort of accepted the work then as an enhancement of their performance repertoire. So it ran for 3 months. We retransmitted every performance every night from the opera house. And so we retransmitted about 100 hours of opera to around 4,500 households in Zurich.
Wow. Oh, so good.
No. The second work we would like to talk about is a very recent work. It's called Delivery for Mr. Assange. We produced it in January this year, so about 11 months ago. And the starting point for this work was our interest in the circumstances under which Julian Assange has been living at the Ecuadorian embassy in London since seeking asylum in June 2012. The embassy was surrounded by British police in August 2012, around the time the embassy announced that they would grant Julian Assange asylum. And for us, this very strange setting in the heart of London, in the very touristic area of Western London, sort of became the sign of a global diplomatic crisis going on between the powers that be and internet aficionados, transparency people, and with them, Julian Assange.
So normally you don't see this kind of conflict. It's something which shows itself in the media or on the internet, but manifests itself in this touristic area west of London. So you pass all those people when you get nearby, so there are just like many tourists and stuff, and suddenly you are in front of this police barrier, and they have like strange police cars and vans with strange antennas. You kind of really feel the conflict physically. So I would say it's a war zone. So you enter there and you feel it, okay, it's a war zone. So we ask ourselves, how can we intervene into this geopolitical situation where both sides are not really moving anymore? So since months, they are stuck, police is outside, Assad is inside. So we ask ourselves, which communication channels into the Ecuadorian embassy are still open, physically also? I mean, we knew we can't just go there and walk in by ourselves. So we started to analyze the situation, and one question was, what happens if we introduce a bit of normality into these exceptional circumstances? So we realized that the postal system could be an interesting tool to test the situation. Sending a parcel is an everyday act, basically. So, but what happens if you send a parcel to Julian Assange?
So we basically built a parcel, and we wanted better feedback than just going to the post office and posting it. So we made a hole into the parcel, into the side of the parcel, and behind the hole is a camera which takes a picture every 15 seconds, 10 to 15 seconds, and uploads the image to our server. So we really had a parcel with a live tracking image system, and we addressed it to Julian Assange at the Ecuadorian embassy in London. And we basically just wanted to see whether the parcel would reach him, would it be opened, or would it be removed from this postal system. In a sense, it was like a real world ping, or a trace route, or a system test, we called it, inserted into a highly tense diplomatic crisis.
So we also published this picture showing the parcel, what it looks like when it's scanned by an X-ray machine. So, and we published it also on the same website where the live feed was. So we have like this strange device here, something here, and a battery blob on this side.
The outcome of the experiment was totally open, equally for us as for anyone watching online. This is something we really like about art, that it has this, it holds this opportunity for an intentional loss of control. You create an intervention and you just wait for some feedback. In this case, it was waiting for images here. So this was the website where the images arrived. So every 15 seconds, 10 to 15 seconds.
This would reload.
You would have a reload here.
And yeah, maybe we have to say there was also like GPS inside. So we had like the GPS position, live, and like this image stream.
We tried to contextualize a bit what was going on with these images. So you could watch the live feed uncommented, or you could have on the website, you could see a stream of images we posted with comments trying to figure out what was happening to the parcel. And we also posted these images on Twitter. The first image shows Doma queuing up. So you can see him in the mirror bit there. At a post office in East London. So we only tested the British, the Royal Mail system, not no borders there. So yeah, queuing up. He's next. Approaching the counter. The parcel was accepted. This was like the first fear we had, that the person at the post office would say, oh, sorry, this has a hole. I'm not going to accept this. Yeah.
But or maybe they would tape the hole or something, like, okay. So, and it made it like behind this glass thing and disappeared in this bag. It was just like, was accepted. So we received these red images for quite a long time. You would sit there and just like, you know, it was a really slow stream. It's like, you felt like 1995 maybe, you know, every 15 seconds, one picture. And sometimes they were broken, so they were not good. So really, really slow.
And the parcel just sat there for a while at this post office, we assume, in this bag, and then it went dark. Of course, we already got very nervous. Has somebody taped the camera?
Did they find it out? We didn't know. I mean, like, still black. 1 hour later, still black, like receiving one, I mean, every 15 seconds.
But now the parcel was moving or being moved, which we saw through the GPS locations.
And at six, we're like, okay, after 3 hours of black images, we're like, okay, wow, this image appeared, it seemed we just had no light, everything was fine, we are alive. I mean, like, let's go on.
And we saw through the GPS locations that we had arrived at something called Mount Pleasant Mail Centre in central London.
And suddenly this view, like what? You know, for the first time we left like this box and we had like this voyeuristic view of something you wouldn't see normally. So you post something, it disappears, and then it comes out again somewhere else.
We also called this unmanned photography. It's a bit like, I mean, you always get very strange images, trolleys, feet.
It's 9 o'clock, people pushing trolleys, workers. Still dark, and then we would disappear in a green bag. So red, green.
And people online started participating also in this trying to find out what was happening to the parcel. They helped us interpret geolocations, images. Then after 4 hours into the performance, our servers went offline from the many requests. And people started setting up mirrors, started writing scripts to get all the images from our server because they were probably afraid that they would go away or be lost.
So at, I don't know, at around 11, almost 12 hours since posting, we realized, okay, we are on our way out of town. It was really strange because I'm like, East London is here, Julian Assange is sitting here, the parcel just passes and goes here. I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, where is it heading to? So it wasn't really sure and it was moving fast. Black for hours, 11 o'clock, parcel's not moving anymore.
And here we arrived near Heathrow Airport at the Royal Jubilee Mail Centre. That's 22 kilometres west of the city.
So and then again, view of people working, trolleys, 2 o'clock in the morning, trolleys, dominant colour yellow, foot, silent observer, trolley on the move again, and then black again, black. So black since 1 hour 30. It was morning, almost five o'clock in the morning.
Then moving back into the city at 5:30. I think we're at South London Mail Centre now. We'll see in a moment. Yes. And the parcel was always taken out of the bag, which was really nice for our work.
So, at around 9, we were moving towards central London. We were kind of, not sure, but optimistic that maybe a postman will take it and, bring it to Assange. So, another post center at 10 o'clock. And then we started to move around, like, really near. So I'll just, like... We started to move around really near the Ecuadorian embassy.
And we moved very slowly, so we thought maybe we're on the delivery route now. Maybe it's this stop and go movement of a van, always stopping to take out stuff. We could see other mail, but we could never see the van itself, so we weren't really sure.
So around this time, a BBC article went up, and our server went down again. So it was like an immediately reaction on it. And 12 o'clock, still like really moving nearer the embassy, getting nearer. And somewhere around 12:38, so we are waiting since 2 hours basically to be delivered.
People online were writing, "Hey Bitnik, when will this parcel be delivered? Because I really need to get some work done."
And or also, "Hurry up, Bitnik. No one is working in my office. Parcel already ruined my morning." And so, and I've been watching this for 24 hours. I'm exhausted. So then,
we were also exhausted.
I'm like, we didn't sleep for a night the night before to get this thing done. So at then,
we started seeing houses, so we were quite sure we were in a van.
And then here a hand, and the van. Yeah.
The
it's nearly
van
empty.
Van is empty.
So I'm like, it's about us now, no?
Then the other post comes, and we were like, oh my God, we're being taken back to that delivery center.
Then at around 2 o'clock, we received these strange images, and I mean, like, location would now say we are in front of the Ecuadorian embassy, so it's just about to pass this police border. But and we didn't really know what was going on here. This is something like a delivery folder, a delivery list, some things from inside maybe, but yes. We think we are in front of the embassy now, image is still black, waiting for delivery. Still nothing happening, diplomatic crisis. Or is the postman just like, he took a lunch break? Come on, I'm like, 4 hours. And then at 2 o'clock, you don't see it really well here, so it's really about small changes in the image, but here we could see something like a floor. And the floor is
like a wooden floor.
So it was clear. We are somewhere inside. No, we're not outside anymore. We are somewhere inside.
And we assumed we had been delivered to the embassy, and now got confirmation at 2:50.
So WikiLeaks was writing on Twitter, "Bitnik package has arrived, is now with embassy security," and we're like, yeah, we made it inside the embassy. Royal Mail has delivered the parcel. WikiLeaks confirms, parcel is still in total darkness. We are waiting, still nothing for 90 minutes. The parcel transmitted over 9,000 images. Most of them are black.
Somebody immediately wrote that.
This is not true.
10,000 images and only 34% are black.
We're like, okay, I'm like, you do the analysis for us. So it went on for some hours again, and then we would see at 4:30, we'll see like strange images like this, and we weren't sure. Are we on a sofa, placed on a sofa? Battery time would get critical. We knew we had like 30 hours, 26 hours passed, so it's about 4 or 5 hours left. Maybe less, we don't know. So and then at 6, this pic. And everybody was like, wow. And it looks really official, no? So we got this tweet from a journalist from South America saying she knows this is inside the embassy. She was there, and this is a waiting room. And yeah. But it went dark again. And we're like, oh fuck, come on. So somebody switched on the lights and switched it off again. And our camera took 2 or 3 pictures and yes, still back. The suspense is mounting. Some movement, so we had like these strange colors just like some minutes later. We're like, what the fuck is happening now? red color, stripes, something fluffy. What is it?
And we thought it was a dog, but it was a cat. Yeah, well, Twitter was going, it's a cat.
We were like, the next, is it a dog barking? Twitter was like, it's a cat, we think it's a cat. And we were like, we just didn't see the messages because we were heavy uploading the stuff like manually to Twitter because our website was kind of not accessible anymore. So, or it might be a cat, so we realized it. So the question, has Julian Assange taken over? Is he playing with us? Huh? So and then we received this message. Is this thing on? And they were like, yeah, hello, Julian, yes, we are here. Back to black, tiger, more, hello world. So you know the term. Post love is contagious. It's like handwritten messages. It was a tour, right? It was around Ecuador, I would say. Welcome to Ecuador. Welcome to Ecuador. I'll skip this. And then it will demand justice for Aaron Swartz, Free Bradley Mehe, Free Nabil Rajab, human rights activist from Bahrain, who is in prison, Free Anakata, one of the founders of the Pirate Bay, who is in prison, Free Jeremy Hammond, Free Rudolf Elmer, which is a Swiss whistleblower, Free Anons, justice for Aaron Swartz, justice for Aaron Swartz. Transparency for the state, privacy for the rest of us, postal art is contagious. Thank you, Ecuador. Thank you to all our supporters. Keep fighting. 2013 we win. Fin, out of cards. And back to black.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, all right. Thank you very much for that. Sadly, we've already run out of time, so there will be no Q&A right now.